Hello everyone, so welcome to the first Stronger IoT seminar of the new year. So it's a great pleasure to have Beatriz Izaga presenting today. Beatriz is a JSPS fellow from Waseda University. She will talk about the pre-inflationary effects on the primordial power spectrum. Yeah, please take it away.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation and for the presentation. It's a very big pleasure for me to give this talk for the Perimeter Institute, even if it has to be in this non-face-to-face format. Hopefully we will eventually be able to do that again. So I will be talking about work leading to this publication here in collaboration with Guillermo Mena Marugán. So please ask any questions at any time if something is not clear. So let me start with a little bit of motivation. As we know, the standard cosmological model with inflation is very, very successful for describing the primordial inhomogeneities and the primordial perturbations of our universe. However, it is always reasonable to wonder whether it is completely satisfactory, especially when we consider the primeval stages of the universe where the curvature was very, very high. On the one hand, from the theoretical side, we know that the Big Bang singularity poses a loss of predictability, at least from the classical perspective. And related to this fact, in this type of regimes, we expect that quantum gravity phenomena will play an important role. Even beyond quantum gravity, if we have an early non-inflationary epoch, the state for the primordial perturbations is something that is not a settled issue and which could have effects on our observations. On the other hand, from the observational side, there have been reported several anomalies on the angular power spectrum of the cosmic microwave background. Here I only commented a couple of them. And even though they are strongly affected by cosmic variance, they could be pointing to new physics in the early universe. And some people have even referred to this as they could be pointing to a Planck regime of the universe. A promising candidate to address these issues, which has been quite studied over the last years, is loop quantum cosmology. And what is interesting for this talk to me is that it typically includes the studied scenarios in loop quantum cosmology typically include a classical pre-inflationary epoch. So if we want to extract robust predictions from this model, from this theory, we need to clearly understand and disentangle the genuine loop quantum cosmology effects on the evolution of the perturbations from the relativistic one coming from this pre-inflationary epoch. And this is what we try to do here from an analytic perspective. So let me first introduce the model, the setting, perturbations in loop quantum cosmology. So what is loop quantum cosmology? This is a canonical quantization program for cosmological spacetimes, which borrows techniques from the quantization from the non-perturbative theory of loop quantum gravity. Over the last roughly 20 years, these loop quantum cosmology techniques have been widely studied in homogeneous and isotropic cosmologies with a massless scalar field. And they have the quantization has some nice properties on a well-defined Hilbert space. On the one hand, the energy density operator is bounded from above. In the Wheeler-DeWitt equation of loop quantum cosmology, the states of zero volume are dynamically decoupled from the rest. And furthermore, the spectral analysis of the geometrical operator in this Wheeler-DeWitt equation shows strong evidence for the quantum resolution of the cosmological singularity. Furthermore, as I will comment later on, the techniques from loop quantum cosmology can be combined with standard quantum field theory in order to include inhomogeneities in cosmology, and in particular to include cosmological perturbations. So all of these mechanisms that I have just summarized to resolve the Big Bang singularity in loop quantum cosmology are usually referred to as Big Bangs. Actually, when people talk about Big Bangs, they are usually speaking in the context of what is called effective loop quantum cosmology. And this is certain behavior of some families of physical states in the quantization of the system. In particular, they are states that have a certain Gaussian behavior, which in which the geometry is picked in certain trajectories with respect to the massless scalar field. And the trajectories of these peaks are relativistic for low energies, but as one approaches the Planck density, they depart from the relativistic trajectories and they lead to a bouncing cosmology. In particular, the modified Friedmann equations that dictate this bouncing cosmology have this very specific form, which you may have seen in the literature quite sometimes. This rho is the energy density, and this rho c is the critical value for it in loop quantum cosmology, which is 0.4, the Planck density. Okay, so yeah, these are expressed in conformal time. So one can push this even further and try to introduce perturbations. There are many proposals to do that. I will focus here on what is called a hybrid quantization scheme, which simply is consists of the combination of employing loop quantum cosmology techniques to quantize the background geometry and the inflaton field. Now we no longer have a massless scalar, we have a potential so that we allow for inflation. And for the gauge invariant perturbations, they have to be characterized and a Fock representation is employed to quantize them. The treatment of the whole system is canonical in this framework, and the only non-trivial constraint to which it is subject is the zero mode of the Hamiltonian constraint. This is the sum of the Hamiltonian for the homogeneous model and for the gauge invariant perturbations. In the case of scalar perturbations, they are the Muhanov-Sasaki. So this is the Muhanov-Sasaki Hamiltonian. And we can also add tensor perturbations or gravitational waves, which are right away gauge invariant. The physical states, quantum states of the theory, should only depend on the background cosmology and the gauge invariant perturbations, and they should be annihilated by the Hamiltonian constraint operator that represents this Hamiltonian constraint of the theory. So in general, solving this constraint in this inhomogeneous system is very complicated. So finding the full Hilbert space, physical Hilbert space, would be very complicated. So what people do, they want to do physics, so they focus on states that one would expect that could reasonably describe our universe. And these are states in which one only allows a small pack reaction between the background and the perturbations. In particular, this the ansatz that one chooses for the states is such that the dependence of the wave function on the cosmological geometry and on the perturbations factorizes. And then if one performs a mean field approximation on the constraint equation with respect to the state for the background, then one arrives at an effective constraint for the perturbations, only acting on the state for the perturbations, which depends on the background geometry through the expectation values of the geometry operators in the constraint on the background state. This effective constraint generates effective equations for the Muhanov-Sasaki, or well, equivalently for the tensor perturbations, and they have this form. This is the same structure as in general relativity for the Fourier modes. This is the wave number. And the only differences with general relativity are codified in this mass, time-dependent mass function, S, which contains the expectation values and then codifies the loop quantum cosmology effects on the background. Now, recall that we have these physically nice families of states in loop quantum cosmology that are highly picked on bouncing trajectories. So people usually focus on this. In the case in which we have a potential, they are generalized in this way. Okay. And for these states, the mass can be, the expectation values in the mass can be approximately evaluated on the peaks. And in that case, the effective mass for the perturbations takes this form. Here, this P is the pressure of the scalar field. We just obtain it by putting here a minus sign. Okay. And then this U contains the inflaton potential and derivatives. This U is the only quantity that differentiates this mass between the scalar perturbations and tensor perturbations. So I will not need it for this work. Now, there are many possible solutions to these equations, which are actually rather complicated. They have to be solved numerically. But phenomenologically speaking, we would be interested in those such that the large observable scales today, which are the ones that suffer from anomalies, were of the order of the curvature at the bounds, because these are the types of solutions for which we may have modifications in this part of the power spectrum due to quantum geometry effects. Interestingly, when one can try to find this type of solutions, and they are all such that the kinetic energy of the inflaton dominates over the potential one at the bounds. So this potential here is almost negligible with respect to the kinetic contribution. And they imply a short-lived inflation so that the quantum effects coming from the bounds are not washed away by the inflationary regime, and a classically decelerated pre-inflationary expansion before which the quantum bounce happens. Okay, so in general, in part because of what I said, that the equations for the background are quite complicated, these equations, Mukhanov-Sasak equations, have to be solved numerically, but we want to understand what is happening here. So we will try to perform some analytic approximations to solve them. And because we want to distinguish the general relativistic effects from the loop quantum cosmology ones, we will also try to study these equations in the equivalent general relativistic scenario. So before I do that, I will show you, just so that you see, an example of such evolution of the cosmological background. This is the conformal Hubble parameter in front of the number of e-folds. It grows, starts at zero at the bounds where the scale factor is at a minimum, grows very rapidly. This is known as superinflation until it is of order one in Planck units. And then very shortly afterwards, the evolution is already classical. The quantum corrections are negligible. We have an accelerated expansion and then transitioning into slower inflation. So you see that the loop quantum cosmology effects are very, very tightly narrowed to a very short period in the evolution. So we want to try and understand how we can disentangle them from the ones, the possible effects coming from the pre-inflationary regime, which is classical. So let's start investigating this classical kinetically dominated regime, or classically decelerated regime. In a universe, a Friedman universe, with a scalar field with a potential in which we have a pre-inflationary kinetically dominated epoch, in this kinetically dominated period, the potential is eventually completely negligible. So we approximate that epoch as a Friedman universe with a massless scalar field. This eta I would correspond to the onset of inflation, roughly speaking. The solutions are very well known. I express them here in conformal time, just to show you the explicit formula. And for the time being, this eta naught in a pure GR model, as the one that we are studying right now, can be arbitrarily close to singularity. But later on, when we study the loop quantum cosmology case, it can be any time after which the quantum geometry effects are completely negligible, because then we can approximate the evolution of the background with general relativity without losing pretty much any information. We can write down the form of the Mukhanov-Sasak equations, equivalently of the tensor perturbation equations, in this form. And the good thing is that they are analytically solvable. The isotropic solutions, I call them isotropic because they only depend on the wave number, not on the wave vector, can be written as a linear combination of these two Hankel functions of the first and second kind. And they, of course, depend on the integration constants that I call C and D. We can associate these solutions with the vacuum state for the cosmological perturbations, or equivalently call them positive frequency solutions if they are normalized in this way, or the constants are normalized in this way. On the other hand, in the inflationary epoch, later after the kinetically dominated one, the universe would be in a slow roll inflationary scenario, which is of quasi der Sitter type. And for our purposes here of just comparing loop quantum cosmology effects with respect to general relativistic ones, we will ignore any transition effects between the kinetically dominated epoch and the inflationary one, and we will also ignore any deviations from an exact the Sitter phase, so from inflation being exactly the Sitter. So in our work, we will not provide any details about the quantities such as the spectral tilt or the tensor to scalar ratio. So then what this means, what this approximation mean, is that from the onset of inflation until the end, we approximate the background evolution as the Sitter. The solution is very well known, as well as the equations for the Mukhanov or for the gauge invariant perturbations. We can solve them analytically. Okay, they take this form in general, depending on two integration constants. And again, they can be associated with the choice of vacuum state if these constants are normalized. So this is quite standard in general relativity. Now, because we are introducing an instantaneous transition between both periods, it turns out that the mass here is discontinuous. This is the price that we have to pay for making this approximation and being able to solve analytically the equations. But we can solve the equations in each of the two periods exactly. And then if we select one solution in one of the epochs, we can uniquely select the other one in the other epoch by matching them by continuity in the solution and its derivative. So basically fixing initial conditions in the early epoch fixes the state during the Sitter inflation. So we can relate the integration constants, and this is invertible. Okay, so let's now talk about the equations in loop quantum cosmology with short-lived inflation, the phenomenologically interesting case.
Sorry, do you mind if I ask a question at this stage? So,
sure.
So you mentioned that. So what I gather is that at the end of the loop quantum gravity era, the scalar field becomes kinetically dominated. So you mentioned mm-hmm. that. But
yes.
I'm not sure I understand the reason for that. Can you explain why that turns out to be what happens?
Because if we want that the sector of large observable scales today could be of the order of the curvature at the bounds, we need that inflation doesn't last for too long. If it lasts for too long, then it shifts the window of observable scales to much more ultraviolet scales in the sense of K than the order of the space-time curvature at the bound, so they don't feel the curvature at all. And they would be in a Banach Davis state at the end of inflation. So we need a short-lived inflation, and in order to get that, we need that the equations at the bounds are dominated by the kinetic energy of the inflaton. Otherwise,
okay. So it's really a requirement that you place on the kind of solution you want, as opposed to something that would be universal and happening, you know, regardless.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a requirement of if you want physically interesting solutions.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so let's study the loop quantum cosmology equations now. So, as he was asking, and I was just commenting, the phenomenologically interesting solutions in loop quantum cosmology have kinetic domination around the bounds. So, in practice, we usually can set this potential to zero to study these equations analytically, and they are actually solvable in proper time. However, the relation between the conformal time and the proper time is quite complicated. Actually, this function here doesn't have a closed analytical form for its inverse. So it has an inverse, but this is not, doesn't have a closed analytical form. And in part, this means, or well, some consequence of this is that at least for the moment being, we don't know how to solve analytically the Muhanov-Sasaki equations, even when we make this potential equal to zero approximation. So we need to push the approximations a little bit farther in.
Sorry, can I ask a question? Yeah. What is eta here?
Conformal
what is
time. Conformal time.
I see.
Yeah.
So this is the relationship between conformal time and the physical
proper time. Proper time. Yes.
Proper time. I see. Okay. Yes. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. We need some further approximations, but well, the good thing is that we have the exact form of the mass in loop quantum cosmology, so we can check the goodness of those approximations at least. Okay, so we keep the approximation that the potential is zero until the onset of inflation. Remember that we will ignore any transition effects between the kinetically dominated era and the inflationary one. And on the other hand, we recall that the strong loop quantum cosmology effects are relevant only in a very narrow interval around the bound. So it is enough that we try to find a manageable approximation of the mass around the bounds until an eta naught, which is called in the same way as before for obvious reasons, when approximately general relativity would hold. And then to the future of that eta naught, we approximate our model as in the previous slide. So as a classical universe with a massless scalar, and the initial data for the background is given by the initial data provided by loop quantum cosmology. The way here I'm setting in the loop quantum cosmology solutions, the A is equal to one at the box. Just keep that in mind for the order of magnitude of the scales of the system. Okay, so we can check the goodness of this approximation, in particular the relative difference between the loop quantum cosmology and the relativistic mass in the kinetically dominated epoch. And we find that for times as early as 0.4 in proper time, the error is not bigger than 3%. This error grows very fast for smaller times. So that's why I'm setting this lower bound. Okay, so for times bigger than this, we can make this approximation for matching times bigger than that. Now, around the bounds, we want to approximate the mass by some function for which we can analytically solve the gauge invariant perturbation equations. And this turns out that the manageable approximation is to approximate that mass with a post-Euler potential. This is why there's PT here. The amplitude is set, so that we set the amplitude so that the mass coincides with the loop quantum cosmology mass at the bounds, this potential, and the width, this alpha, we set it so that it coincides with the mass in the kinetically dominated general relativity case at the matching time between the surroundings of the bounds and this general relativistic era. Okay, so we define a function piecewise in this way to compare it with the loop quantum, the one that we know exactly, the loop quantum cosmology mass, to see if the approximation is good. And then what we see is that after the matching time, the error is negligible, as we expected. We had already checked that for matching times bigger than 0.4, but before the matching time, it grows. And the best situation is actually found for times around 0.4. For bigger times, the error grows too much. And even then, the error here grows at most to 15%. So it's not ideal. But actually, for our purposes, it is enough. I will, maybe I will have time in the end to discuss a little bit more about this. Okay, so right then, we make the same approximations as before from eta naught onwards, and then we approximate with this post-Euler potential around the bounds, the mass for the Muhanov-Sasaki equations. So in total, throughout the whole evolution, they take this form, right? And they can be solved analytically in each period. We have made sure that we can do that. If we select a solution in one of the periods, we can select a unique solution throughout the whole evolution, matching by continuity in the solution and its derivative. And so we can set initial conditions in the earliest epoch and then know the behavior of the solution. So we know now how to analytically handle the Muhanov-Sasak equations, both in loop quantum cosmology, well, in the interesting solutions of loop quantum cosmology, and in the analog solutions in general relativity that do not avoid the singularity but have a kinetically dominant pre-inflationary epoch. The only ingredient that we need, which is actually the most important one to compare the effects of the two cosmological evolutions on the primordial power spectrum, is the choice of vacuum state. This choice of vacuum state must be such that it reflects the effects that the cosmological background imprints on the perturbations. And actually, the way in which one chooses this state affects the way in which the background, effects from the background are reflected on the power spectrum. So this is really important. This is the really important point the important choice that one has to make when one wants to compare different cosmological evolutions, at least the impact on the power spectrum.
Sorry, can I ask what are those animals that are crossing the large?
Oh, that's just, oh, okay. Yeah, that's some Japanese animation picture. Okay. Yeah.
I thought it's something I should recognize. I don't think I do. Like, sorry about that.
Okay. Yeah. So in order to discuss this, let me first briefly recall what the power spectrum in the sitter looks like. So remember that we had these solutions, this mod solution. A and B are the integrated Young constants. They were subject to this normalization condition. And for big enough values of the scale factor, so for reasonably, when we are reasonably inside inflation or at the end of inflation, we can approximate the primordial power spectrum by this quantity. Now there is something quite evident from this expression of the power spectrum is that if these integration constants have some defacing that is that depends on k, then the power spectrum will display oscillations in k. In the standard situation, this doesn't happen because Vance Davis has this property, but this is a general feature if you generically choose the vacuum state. So this is okay, this is normal, but there is some subtle point in the system that we are analyzing because of the approximations that we are introducing, and in particular the discontinuities and lack of smoothness of the mass function that leads to some oscillations that we are going to regard as artificial because their ultimate origin seems to be the approximations that we are using. And these are those oscillations that appear when there is no interference. So there is no oscillations in the previous epochs, but suddenly oscillations appear when we instantaneously match the solution at the de Sitter epoch. This type of defacing between the integration constants can be traced, this instantaneous matching that we are making of the solution. And therefore, if we find this type of oscillations for which there were none in the previous epochs, we will remove them in the end. Okay. We will encounter this later. So as I said, the power spectrum that we know comes from the natural choice of vacuum in the sitter, which is the Banks-Davis vacuum. This just corresponds to B equal to 1, A equal to 0, and this is the standard scale invariant power spectrum. If we are slightly away from the sitter, then we have a spectral tilt. This is good if our observable scales, in the inflationary and pre-inflationary history of the universe, if the only relevant curvature scale that they felt was some curvature scale during inflation, then it is natural that they are in a Vance Davis state. But if they felt curvature scales in the pre-inflationary epoch, where when the evolution is not of the sitter type, then the choice of vacuum becomes an open question for those escapes. And the issue is not settled. In any case, we would like for a robust comparative study that the criterion of choice could be applicable to different types of cosmological dynamics so that we can compare them. Ideally, it should also be motivated by fundamental considerations, optimally from a quantum cosmology scenario. And finally, something that we know from well-established choices of vacuum state known, very well-known background spacetime, such as Minkowski or de Sitter, is that it is physically natural that we do not expect a vacuum state that is adapted to the evolution of the background to display rapid oscillations in time or in K, or at least in the time scales in which the background doesn't change too much. So it's something that we will require. There are, as I said, the criterion is not fixed so far, but there we have performed several studies in the past, and it seems that there is at least there is a hint of a way of choosing the vacuum state that can comply with all of the requirements that I was talking about. On the one hand, it has a fundamental origin from the perspective that it originates from an UV, so large K, that diagonalization of the Hamiltonian in quantum cosmology. And by quantum cosmology, I mean that we are treating quantum mechanically both the background and the perturbations. In this UV regime, it is the only vacuum state that does not display rapid oscillations in time or in the frequency K, and this is regardless of the type of background that we have. And when we apply the criterion to Minkowski and the Sitter spacetime, it leads to the standard well-known Poincaré-Banks-Davis vacuum. So that's good. By the way, I will say this again, this vacuum do not oscillate. So explicitly, here I'm not deriving how we characterize this vacuum state, but I will show you how you obtain this. It is characterized by frequency, which is the imaginary part of a function h, which has this asymptotic expansion for large k. And this asymptotic expansion is uniquely fixed by the mass. This is S is the time-dependent mass in the Mukhanov-Sasaki equations or the tensor perturbation equations. And it's an infinite number of its derivatives, basically. So the mass must be smooth. This is not a problem in general relativity or effective loop quantum cosmology because there the mass is smooth. But in our model, with our simplifications, we have introduced non-smoothness and discontinuities in the mass. So we cannot apply this formula to the whole of the cosmological evolution. And actually, this, in the end, is underlying the fact that we will get some spurious oscillations. However, we can use this formula in the earliest epoch in which the mass is smooth in each of the models, in the kinetically dominated epoch in general relativity, a classically decelerated epoch, or the bouncing regime in loop quantum cosmology, and then see what kind of vacuum we get imposing continuity afterwards. So let's do that. First, we start with general relativity. Recall that the general solution of the Mukhanov-Sasaki equations is this one in terms of Hankel functions. With our asymptotic expansion, we can fix one of them, a particular solution, this one. If we impose continuity of the solution and its derivative, we then get the positive frequency solutions, the corresponding positive frequency solutions in the sitter. They take this form, okay? These are the integration constants. And what is interesting for us here is that the behavior of the resulting power spectrum, which depends on the difference of these two constants, the square norm of that, is that the dependence on K of that is fixed by the relative behavior of K, the wave number, with respect to the conformal Hubble parameter at the onset of inflation, this AI times H lambda. H lambda, recall, is the Hubble parameter during inflation. So this is a curvature scale at the onset of inflation with respect to which the behavior of the power spectrum will change. Actually, we can see that the norm of these positive frequency solutions do not oscillate. However, when we make the instantaneous matching with the sitter, we find some artificial oscillations around Ki, and we will remove them. As I commented, we remove the defacing between the A and B constants. So this is the result. This is the oscillating version. Actually, this was already realized almost 20 years ago by these people, and then several works after that investigated the effect of a kinetically dominated regime in the power spectrum. But in all of the cases, the behavior depends on the relative value of the scale of the wave number with respect to the scale at inflation. This the curvature scale at inflation, this Ki. So we see that we have a scale invariance in the UV. This is good, this is compatible with observations. And then when we approach the curvature scale at the onset of inflation, we get a steep suppression of the power spectrum. Okay. So now let's study the loop quantum cosmology case. In the earliest epoch, which is around the bounds, we have the following general solution to the Mukhanov-Sasak equations. We can analytically solve them because we approximated it with a Bostellar potential. And it's quite complicated. It involves two hypergeometric functions. These are Gauss hypergeometric functions, some complicated constants. But what I would like you to keep in mind here is that the behavior with respect to K depends on the relative value of the wave number with respect to this alpha. This was the width of the Bostellar potential. And so that for the approximations to be good, this width turns out to depend on the parameters on the curvature scale at the bounds, which is of order of 3 Planck units. So this alpha is of order 3. It's of the same order as the mass at the bounds. And this is of the same order as the curvature scale at the bounds. So this can be regarded as a curvature scale at the bounds. Okay. Now we can use our criterion for the choice of vacuum, that asymptotic formula that I showed before, to select.
Can I ask a question? Why are you talking about the curvature scale? I missed what do you mean by curvature?
I mean a space-time curvature. So the mass of the cosmological perturbations at the bounds is directly related with the space-time curvature there.
This is a space-time curvature. I see.
So yeah, it's not that's okay. No. It's that's space-time curvature, and it's of order three Planck units.
I see. Thank you.
So of order one. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is the positive frequency solution that is fixed by our criterion, and if we impose continuity the matching time between the classical regime and the vicinity of the bounds, we obtain positive frequency solution in that classical regime. They are fixed by this integration constant C and D. And I only show them here because apart from the fact that they depend on the relative behavior between K and this curvature scale at the bounds, they also depend on the relative behavior between K and the conformal Hubble parameter at the matching time. Now, the matching time was just after the loop quantum cosmology effects were negligible. And this is right after this superinflationary period where the conformal Hubble parameters goes from 0 to 1. So it's actually of order 1 in Planck units. So it's roughly of the same order as the curvature at the bounds. This is quite important for the behavior of the power spectrum with respect to K. Furthermore, when we make the matching of these solutions with the ones in the sitter epoch to finally extract the power spectrum, we will get a dependence on the scale at the onset of inflation. But this scale, this curvature scale, is much smaller than, I will discuss this in more detail in a moment, but this scale is much smaller than the curvature scale at inflation. Actually, without entering in many details, again, we can study that there are some artificial oscillations for wave numbers around the curvature scale at the bounds, and we remove them in the same way as before, in exactly the same way as we did in general relativity. And this is the result. So we see now we directly have K with the units, as with these scales or units associated with choice A equal to 1 at the bounds and our loop quantum cosmology solutions. So when this is logarithmic scale now, so when K approaches the Planck unit or the curvature scale at the bounds, it starts becoming suppressed. And then when it approaches the curvature scale at the onset of inflation, for the solutions that we are considering with a short-lived inflation starts at the curvature scale of the order of 10 to the minus 3, the biggest, so 10 to the minus 3 or smaller. So you see that around that point, the suppression becomes even steeper, but the suppression starts much earlier than before. And actually we can compare this loop quantum cosmology power spectrum with the one that we would obtain in the pure relativistic model if we consider that inflation starts at the same curvature scale for a meaningful comparison. And you see the great difference in the power spectrum, or at least in at which point power suppression starts. Here, finally, I just I want to show different times of the matching time in the definition of the postular potentials, just so you see that even though the approximation was a little bit rough, of an error of 15%, it is not too meaningful in the final result, the final comparison. And this is because for all the phenomenologically interesting solutions for the background in loop quantum cosmology, namely those for which only the big scales that we can observe today could have felt the quantum curvature in the early, very, very early universe. For those solutions, the curvature at the bounds, which is of the order of the Planck unit, is always much, much bigger, or of several orders of magnitude bigger than the curvature at the onset of inflation. So in any case, it is clear that if there is power suppression for a well-motivated choice of vacuum state in loop quantum cosmology, then this power suppression, if the vacuum state has really captured the effects, the loop quantum effects at the bounds, the power suppression will start at a curvature scale that cannot be reproduced by general relativity. That is not special in general relativity, because this curvature scale is the maximum, is the upper bound for the curvature in loop quantum cosmology. And in general relativity, the curvature is unbounded. From above, we have the singularity. That's really a physically relevant difference between the two models, that this type of suppression cannot be reproduced by the relativistic system, at least in an analog condition. So this is the main message of this work. We have employed approximative techniques to understand analytically the main difference that the pre-inflationary effects coming from general relativity and from genuine loop quantum cosmology phenomena can have on the primordial power spectrum if we choose the vacuum state such that there is suppression in this power spectrum. And the differences can be traced to the existence of two physically relevant and different scales. The curvature at the onset of inflation, which is present in both models, and the curvature at the bounds, which is only present, or at least only dynamically relevant in loop quantum cosmology, because it is really the maximum of the space-time curvature. These two scales for phenomenologically interesting loop quantum cosmology solution always differ in three orders of magnitude, so they are truly qualitatively different, and one should be able to distinguish the two resulting power spectra coming from each model. I believe that the techniques that we have used, especially the criterion for the choice of vacuum state, are general enough so that they can be used to compare other pre-inflationary scenarios, not only loop quantum cosmology, or even different models within loop quantum cosmology. One can push this study further. The approximations are yet rough, especially in the evolution of the perturbations and the discontinuity. We should probably relax some of the approximations and try to make the discontinuities a little bit softer that we're introducing. I don't know if I have some outlook slides, a couple of more outlook slides. So if Karim wants to make a question, because I think he raised the hand, I can take that. No?
Sure.
You please open my camera, because you co-host stopped my camera.
Sorry, do you have a question?
I have a question, but you stopped my camera. The host has stopped it.
Can you just ask your question or?
Okay. I ask about how much mass we need to make a time arrow bending to be a curved arrow. How much is?
What do you mean?
I ask about how much mass we need to make a time arrow bending to be a curved arrow. How much mass to need to make a time arrow to be a bending to be curved? Curvature in time only.
What kind of mass do you mean? I'm not sure that I understand the question.
I ask about energy momentum tensor in Einstein field equation.
Well, there is a limit of the critical mass that a critical amount of energy that you can store in a space-time region, but it's known so from which it will collapse. I don't know if you're referring to that, but that's a black hole situation.
Okay.
Do we have any other questions? Or you said you have some additional slides to show? Sorry.
Yes. I have a little bit of time. I've been thinking of some prospective future work in the future. And I think that the insight that we are getting with analytical studies of this type, or all the works that leading to the results that I have presented, could give insights for future work in the context of black holes. So this is just very, very general ideas. Just take them as some future interest if you want. But it's true that recently there have been quite some interest in the loop quantum cosmology community devoted to trying to investigate some newly loop quantum cosmology inspired models of spherically symmetric black holes, which seem to satisfactorily resolve the singularity, the black hole singularity, and have a rather acceptable semi-classical behavior. So if one would be able to provide a quantum description of the black hole geometry in these cases, then it seems, at least from what we know in cosmology, it seems possible that a hybrid quantization of perturbations around it would be plausible or feasible, at least to try to tackle on. And this would be a way of trying to describe, for example, in a quantum gravity way, the ring down phase of the merger of two black holes, at least. Well, a first step towards it, because they are not considering spin in these cases yet. But in any case, if we follow the same type of line of reasoning as in as in quantum cosmology, and we are able to extract some effective wave equations for these gravitational waves, these perturbations around the black hole, then they would most likely contain modifications from the quantum corrections to the background. In particular, probably the notion of black hole horizon would change, and possibly also the properties of these wave equations or the gravitational wave potential in the asymptotic region would change. And these two, the behavior in these two regions is very, very important in general relativity, or it's crucial for the proper definition of initial conditions for the gravitational waves under quasi-normal modes. So certainly, I think the standard notion of quasi-normal modes as they are viewed in general relativity should probably be revisited if these two concepts or these two structures change notably in the corrected quantum loop quantum corrected black hole. And I think at least the way in which I see it, these wave equations are the mathematical structure is not so different from the ones for the cosmological perturbations in cosmology. So I think we should count on the intuition and expertise that we have gained in this context, especially concerning the choice of vacuum and its consequences on possible predictions. But that's all I would like to thank you all for your attention.
Okay. Thank you, Beatrice. That's a very nice talk. Okay. Any questions? Luis has a question.
Thank you, Beatrice. Just two questions. So one related to what you just said, and the other one with respect to the bulk of your talk. So on these ones, I'm not familiar with these results. The corrections presumably are modulated by what? So the scale at which you're probing over with respect to Planck length, and if so, I mean, is there a possibility that it will have an imprint that is observable given the technology you have nowadays? Or is there a way for the UV to kind of move on to the IR and leave some imprints? So that's the first one. But the other one, so let me just ask the two of, and you answer whichever one you want. The other one is that in the previous one, so you use loop quantum gravity, you identify a particular regime where it should play a role, and that's pre-inflationary. The other one takes it, and then there are consequences. But so is it not the case that we don't know what the initial conditions are with respect to pre-inflation? And if so, could I not adjust my initial configuration to mimic whatever loop quantum gravity is giving me and still get the same behavior to the future of it? Is there a clearly smoking gun for me to say, oh, this came from some loopy structure that happened before the inflationary stage, or do I still have that ambiguity that it couldn't tell in the end where it came from?
At least you cannot reproduce it with just general relativity with a scalar field, with one scalar, like an inflaton field. This is what I'm trying to say here. Or for reasonable curvature scales at the onset of inflation. However, I mean, if you have a bouncing model for which, so if you somehow can distinguish this special scale of order three Planck units in your observations and suppression from that, you can somehow really distinguish that. Then you would need some, I guess, fundamentally motivated model that has a curvature scale that is relevant for the evolution of the perturbations in the same way as it is in loop quantum cosmology. Of course, this is always very a little bit indirect because it is the imprint on the perturbations, but you would need, so there's quite a combination of a few things. I don't even know if you would need a bounce or a maximum for that, but you would really need a curvature scale that is dynamically relevant of the same order, that is dynamically relevant in the same way for the perturbations. Most likely a bounce at the same scale. But I mean, whether that is loop quantum cosmology or not, at least loop quantum cosmology tries to provide a well-motivated framework for that.
Okay.
Yeah. And with respect to your other questions, well, I think it's maybe too soon, maybe for me to answer that question, or too early. From what we know in cosmology, I would rather think of it as in cosmology, what it happens is that in the end, because of how the scales of the system are related, there is a connection between the UV, if you want, the very high curvature regime, and the infrared in the sense of the length scale of the perturbations. So if I would follow the cosmological, what we have learned in cosmology, I would maybe say that perhaps the same happens with the spectrum of the gravitational waves, but I think it's too early for me to answer this
Yeah, thank you. But so just one follow up on that last point you made. So in this connection from the UV to the IR, is it not crucial to have that inflationary period or something that will do the connection? And if we don't have that in the, or what would be the analog in the black hole case? Or perhaps I'm just asking something and it's completely nonsensical.
Well, actually, you may have a point there. Yeah, you may have a point there. I think I would need to think a little bit more carefully about that. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Will?
Yeah, thanks for the nice talk. So I had two questions. So the first one was, you mentioned that you don't want too many E-folds of inflation, or otherwise these like pre-inflationary effects will not be observable. Does it also matter the energy scale of inflation? Do you not want it to be too low, because then you'd have too much of this like pre-inflationary, like classically dominated?
Well, I mean, if inflation is too short, the problem is it may happen that you have quantum like pre-inflationary corrections in your spectrum in the region in which you know that it's almost a scale invariant, that is almost Punch Davis. So yeah, that would be a problem as well if you have too short inflation. That would be just incompatible with the observation.
Yeah, I was just wondering if to have these observable effects, you need the energy of the scale of inflation to be sufficiently high, and just how that compares to the you know latest constraints on the tensor to scalar ratio.
So what do you mean exactly?
Yeah, just wondering, like, does the energy scale of inflation have to be sufficiently high to have these observable quantum effects, or that doesn't matter?
I think it has to be, low enough, but not too low. Okay. Otherwise, the fact that the... So the think the tensor, there may be some imprints on the tensor to scalar ratio indirectly from the separation from the infrared, but mostly this value for the inflaton at the onset of inflation, or the space-time curvature at the onset of inflation is what you need so that the effects are observable. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, so my second question was, so I guess in your setup, you're basically assuming you have homogeneity plus some small perturbations on top of that, right? I mean, and that seems you know, reasonable, like, you know, very reasonable approximation once inflation happens. But I guess before that, you might worry that you have kind of large inhomogeneities or things like that. So is that something that you worry about, or does that sort of not arise somehow because you're imagining you're kind of creating, you're tunneling into like a universe at the Planck scale and some other
that well, at least,
sets aside the homogeneities?
Yeah, on the one hand, so we want to be in like, on the one hand, when we treat the perturbations with Fock techniques instead of some more quantum gravity inspired scenario, we are already kind of assuming a regime which is a little bit intermediate in between full quantum gravity and the quantum field theory in curved spacetime. So from that perspective, I mean, I think it is quite reasonable to consider them as perturbation at this stage. So we want to treat really the background is something qualitatively different here. The quantum behavior is qualitatively different from that of the perturbations. We just don't consider that the inhomogeneities can be big in the earliest epochs. I mean,
okay.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. That answers my question.
Yash?
Thank you. So it's a very nice talk. I have a lot of questions, but I think I'm going to forget a lot of them now. But can you remind me what inflationary model you're using?
It's for my purposes, the form of the potential is not relevant because in the end, I always ignore it in my approximation, but it's just a scalar field minimally coupled with a potential term.
So, but how can you ignore it? Because you're using a particular Hankel functions as solutions to the Mukhanov-Sasaki equation. That depends on the choice of.
Mm-hmm. No. The potential is zero. So I'm setting the potential identity.
Right, that part is zero, but the other part, this is the KD part, but the part, the inflation part, which you match to, match. Okay.
No, right. It's the sitter. It's the sitter. I don't consider deviations from the sitter.
Right, but Sasaki Mukhanov variables are not well defined in the sitter because basically phi dot is zero. So there, you want to have some deviations from the sitter. Don't you?
Actually, you can rescale the Mukhanov-Sasaki variable so that it is so it's actually the Komovian curvature perturbation that fails when phi dot is zero, has a divergence when phi dot is zero. But here in loop quantum cosmology, because you have that transition and at some point phi dot becomes zero, we don't use the Komovian curvature perturbations, but a rescaling of that, in which we absorb that phi dot that you're talking about. And then at the end of inflation, you introduce that phi dot to compute the power spectrum. But in any case, in my work, I'm not using any of that.
Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, the form of the Mukhanov-Sasaki field, yes. But in the end, my power spectrum is just the power spectrum in the sitter. I only have to scale with the power of the scale.
Okay.
Yeah,
I see. And so the other question I have is how is your work different from what Ashtekar and his collaborators have done with predictions of the power spectrum?
Well, there are several works. The main difference is that this is an analytical approach to the problem. The choice of vacuum state is also different. There have been different choices of vacuum state. The latest one by Ashtekar and collaborators is a specific one for which they average in, they have oscillations in the power spectrum, but after averaging, they get the suppression. But this is fully numerical. Even the choice of vacuum state to some extent is a numerical. It's based on numerical arguments.
So is your result consistent with what they find or is it different?
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. Actually, in their latest works, the suppression that they find starts at the curvature scale, that is the curvature scale at the bounds. So it's not a general relativistic effect. Yeah. But we wanted to look at it, we wanted to understand what was going on because there were concerns already raised that were questioning whether these effects from loop quantum cosmology were just from a short-lived inflation or were truly coming from the bounds. So this is what we wanted to look at. Yeah.
Okay, and then I guess the final question I have is, do you have any guesses as to what type of effects you might see if you do something like this for black holes, like in gravitational waves? What are you going to see?
I cannot confidently answer that without knowing how how the quasi-normal modes, what that will be the properties of the quasi-normal modes, and even settling the properties of the space-time after quantization. So okay. Yeah, I think it's too early for me, at least, to
answer. Fair enough. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Okay, so it's already 6:02. Maybe just one quick question, Subhadip.
Hey, thank you very much. Very nice talk. I have a quick question regarding the so there's a subpressure in the CMB microwave, CMB temperature field at low L. Did you try switching your model to those data and see what kind of constraint you get?
I think the results here are too, like, there are too many approximations to compute directly the angular power spectrum and compare with observations. If I go, I can refer to you to the latest works by Astekar and collaborators. Uh-huh. And it does seem that the tensions seem to be alleviated when you consider this suppression in the power spectrum starting at the
And you can also make a corresponding prediction for CLBB, I assume.
Excuse me?
A CLBB, the B more power.
Yes. For this CL, which correlation? Which correlation?
When you plot the CLBB, the power spectrum for the B more polarization.
Well, I mean, the tensor perturbations are also affected by the power spectrum for the tensor perturbation is also affected by the loop quantum effects in a very similar way as the scalar.
I assume the power will actually go down at low L.
The only differences are within inflation, and within inflation already the model is general relativity. So the rest is qualitatively it's quite similar.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, very nice talk and very nice discussions.
Thank you
all. So let me stop recording.